With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, the word is out. They're going to talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 727, A Whale. Sure. We'll go with that. So, I guess, so we are broadcasting from undisclosed locations because flat tires and child sickness, and so let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. I guess before we dig in, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart, TuneIn. Wherever you find a podcast, you can find us while you're there. Be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. That's always helpful. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. You could also maybe share an episode. It's the easiest thing you can do to help us out is just share an episode in your feed. So people who were kind enough to share an episode this week include Ralph Tribble, Chris Valls, Chris Magicman, Chris Sanders, the Chris trifecta. We haven't had that
right
in a while.
That's right.
Yeah. Julian, Jordan, Tammy Lynn Powers, Betts, Travis, T-Witt, Gabriel, Lugo, Lane LeVanway, Heather Sachs, Brent Smith, Christopher Rex, Matt Bassler, Phil T., David Rojas, Geek to Me Radio, Ronnie Castle, Invasion of the Remake, Mike and Oscar, In Session Film, Binge Movies, Ryan Terry, Colby Mack, Nostalgia Cast, Feel and Film, and Dissect That Film. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. Also, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out and we like you extra.
A little extra. Yeah, we just did, we recorded our Violent Night episode. So just in time for Christmas.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah, it'll be out by Christmas of 23, yes. So it's perfect.
Yeah, it'll be ready for you. Don't worry about
11
it.
11 months early. Yeah. That's how I like to think of it.
Well, what is the saying you famously made up, Joe?
New Year's Evil.
New Year's Evil. So what is the February? Is there some kind of like Valentine's?
My Bloody Valentine. Day?
Yeah, there you go. Good. He made up another one. Perfect.
Wow,
totally original.
You are a machine.
Wait for April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
That's also a movie, for the record. That's
right. Okay. Also, don't forget we have a YouTube. So if you would like rather watch us instead of listen to us stare into our dreamy eyes, you can do that over at the YouTubes.
And they did last week. We were impressed with the numbers on Plane. We posted that video because of all the illnesses and stuff. The Plane video went up late, and it is our most viewed video.
Hey,
so more
go figure.
Than, yeah, the number two was from 4 months ago. So
was RIPD with 17,000 views.
RIPD is number one still, but we are trying not to count that.
We have no idea why.
Nope, can't figure that out.
So The Whale, so it's fascinating as sometimes a film can pick up speed with the critics and kind of reach this, no pun intended, critical mass of everyone jumping on board, raving about a film, and yet they can all be completely wrong.
Oh, see,
this movie is hot garbage. Wow. I don't understand why anyone likes this piece of trash film.
Tell us how you really feel. This is one of those instances where the content of the film, like, was whatever. But I will say his performance is pretty impressive.
Like, his performance saves a shitty script.
Absolutely.
Like that is like first semester freshman playwright level writing. Like, this movie is on a stick, and I don't understand why people are feverishly masturbating to it in the same way he does in the opening scene of the film.
He does.
This movie is a complete turd. Like, I hated everything about this movie.
Maybe his 8-year-old daughter wrote the script and he felt the need to make it.
Well, given how the film opens, if his 8-year-old daughter wrote the script, she needs to be seen by a professional immediately.
Immediately, right.
Something is amiss.
There were moments as I was sitting in this theater and I was like, this reminds me of Tusk,
except it's serious. Like Tusk,
that's exactly right. Like Tusk is very like
tongue in cheek. Where yes. This like thinks it's really deep and smart, and it's
yeah.
not.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. It's Aronofsky. I mean, that's all he makes. Though.
I got to tell you though, there was a moment when I there's a point where I forgot that this was a Darren Aronofsky movie, and the final scene of this movie, and we'll just do it now. Is Brendan Fraser gets up, stands up from the couch, is walking over to his daughter, and there's a moment where I was like, this is Darren Aronofsky. He's going to fall on that girl.
He's going to eat her.
I was thinking he's going to fall on her and squish her.
I thought the first time that's what was going to happen. I thought it was going to be a mishap with him when, you know, he's falling and can't do it or whatever. I thought it was going to be a catastrophe then.
And, you know, he did a Noah movie with giant rock monsters.
Did he at some point find religion? And every movie he has deals with religion now.
So wait, think so we had Noah, many, right? And then did he do Mother?
Mother,
which is a religious allegory. This is highly religious and questioning faith. So, yeah. I mean, and fine, I just, it's interesting because, you know, he did Requiem for a Dream, which had nothing to do with religion. The Wrestler doesn't seem very religious, and that's a great movie. Like, religious movies wasn't his thing, and then all of a sudden, every movie now, and the Fountain seems, it's at least philosophical, I don't know about religious, but it is very, like, you know, questioning.
But it's almost like a stepping stone into religion. Like, that's where he was at in his journey at the time, and it led to religion somehow.
Right, which makes me think that it's like he somehow found religion or questioned something about faith or, you know, life, philosophical, and then it's just like every single movie. And again, no problem. I never heard that story. Like, I wonder what is making that be his focus of every film now.
Yeah, but Noah's so weird because it does kind of do the whole, you know, crisis of faith, yada yada yada, and then he's fighting rock monsters. Mm-hmm. Like where did this like fantastical fantasy element, like,
well, they gave him $80 million,
they said, yeah, that's do true. Something.
Yeah, I forgot about that. They're like, hey, we've got like $60 million left over, what do you want to do? He's like, I don't know. Rock monsters? He's like, that's a good idea.
Giant rock monsters.
Yeah. You know, let's go have him fight some rock monsters. I'm kind of glad that now he didn't do that Batman movie like that, given the track record we've had so far. And I don't.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
that would have been in the 90s or something, right? That would have been a different time.
Yeah, so
that was coming off Pi that they were being that about, wasn't it?
Oh, jeez, yeah, that would have been really
It was post Batman and Robin. Right,
and that might have been okay because at that point, because I think it was like right after Pi, so he's an art house darling.
Sure,
but I don't think he would have had like the courage or the muscle to stand up to a studio and be like, no, I think the Penguin's gonna eat a baby. Like,
I think we're gonna have Jim Gordon taking a hit on a toilet.
Yeah, right. That would have been his with work his gun for in hire his mouth after. Coming from the indie scene, he would have had to kind of play ball and get his
right.
Yeah,
get his
that's
beak
fair.
Wet.
That's
or
fair.
He'd have been Josh Trank.
Right, exactly, because that's what happens when you go from art house darling, and then here's this huge budget, and you say, I don't want to do anything the studio wants. And they're like, wait, that's not the deal.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to do you know, the Fantastic Four with really bad wigs and reshoots. And
it's like, then you need to find your own financing and your own IP.
The thing that strikes me with this movie, and like we've talked about, Aronofsky, he's made some great films,
but it's been a while.
I think. But, you know, I mean, some people would argue, all right, like the people that were in the minority on Mother, like people love that movie.
Man, that movie was trash.
But
yeah, it's garbage.
One thing is, his movies do take themselves seriously, right? He's not making tongue-in-cheek movies. He's not making comedy movies. Every movie is serious that he makes. He just doesn't make. So this movie.
Can you imagine having dinner with that guy?
No.
God, that would have to be exhausting. Plus, I wouldn't want to trust any food that was put in front of me. But even beyond that, I just think that, like, this guy just seems like he would be exhausting to interact with.
Well, he's just got to be intense with his artistic vision.
Yeah.
What struck me as strange is as serious as this film takes, and how, like, when you think about movies like The Fountain that are so deep and philosophical and all that, and then this movie, it wants to take itself seriously, but the whale, the whole thing with the whale is so on the nose.
Right.
Like, is that supposed to be so clever at the end? Because they feed you this stuff about the paper, the essay about Moby Dick, and then it's like, oh, the whale, and they're reading the essay over the top of this huge guy getting up and facing his fears and all that. And I don't know, to me, that just seemed kind of cheesy at the end. Not as brilliant as I think there, it was supposed to be.
The whole thing was cheesy. I mean, this whole thing, like, the only thing heavier than Brendan Fraser's character was the handedness of this movie.
Yeah, it seemed so, like, I did not hate this movie. I was on board.
There are parts that I identified with, I should probably clarify which parts I identified with, but
I think there's a lot of things to identify with, and it doesn't have to be obesity, right? So, like, that can be a placeholder for other things, but relationships, familial relationships, and messing up, having a second chance, you know, not deserving to punish yourself, deserving to live. And I think there's a lot of good things to take away from the film. It had my attention. It all takes place in one location, and I never felt bored. I mean, the movie had me intrigued, and I think Fraser gives a great performance. I do agree that without the performance element of it, it probably wouldn't have been as good, but it did have my attention. I just thought the heavy-handedness, like you said, it especially at the end, when I'm like, oh, it just, I don't know, it didn't hit right to me, to where they plant things, like with the essay. So from the very beginning of the movie, right, like he's...
Can you plant a billboard?
Right.
Like,
I mean,
like,
you could plant the stilts or the platform.
Well, and
then put the billboard on top of that.
But at the very beginning of the movie, he's having some kind of a heart episode, and we come to find out that he's dying. He's very unhealthy. He's not just go get some medicine, you'll be better. He has morbid obesity. He's going to die. His heart's going to fail. Like, congenitive.
If I ever get to a point in my life where I start to have a heart attack from jerking off, I'm going to go ahead and end it.
What else do you have to live for?
I'm done. There's nothing left for me in this world. I've had a good run. I quit.
So when he's in the middle of that little event, a missionary comes by. This is very much like a Jehovah Witness type thing. He's going door to door, and he's trying to tell him about the Bible or whatnot. But he sees that the door is unlocked, luckily, and Brendan Fraser thinks that it's Liz, his friend, that takes care of him. And he's like, open the door. And he comes in, and he's like, what can I do? And he hands him an essay. And so from that point, you know, I'm intrigued. I'm like, what is it with this essay? And so he starts reading this essay to him, and he kind of calms down. And they fooled me on one of two things in this movie, because there's two kind of twist type mysteries with it. One is who was his boyfriend, and the other one is who wrote this essay. And so I figured
once
we get the backstory kind of that his boyfriend died, and that's why he started eating and becoming unhealthy, and then Liz takes care of him, and we find out that her brother died, I'm like, oh, okay, well, the boyfriend's the brother, that's how he knows her.
Right.
So I picked up on that. I presumed, as I think everyone's supposed to, the his boyfriend wrote the essay because his boyfriend was a student, and after class, now they made it clear, like, they waited until after he wasn't his student anymore, but that's how he met him, and they had a relationship. He left his wife, he left his daughter when she was 8 years old, and started a relationship with this guy.
So here's the problem with the essay.
Yeah.
No middle schooler in the history of the world has ever been told to read Moby Dick. Not one time.
But maybe is it a, like no. sometimes you can choose no. what you read?
No.
And she's smart?
No middle schooler has chosen to read Moby Dick.
But
hard
what if your
pass.
Father's an English professor?
Nope. Nope. This oh, kid hates this kid hates him, hates everything about him.
Well,
hates this
no,
book.
She didn't hate
she
him, hates
back
him then. Now.
She wrote it when they were together or whatever.
But I will say,
right?
I don't think so, because it's been 9 years and she's like a junior senior in high school.
Oh,
so,
that's right. I guess the mother, he said the mother gave it to him.
Oh,
okay,
that's
you're
right.
Right. So,
that's right.
So she would have had to choose it. You're right. And she hated him at the time. Yeah.
There is no way this kid was reading Moby Dick as a middle schooler.
Do you think
no
she,
way.
What if she tried to choose it to somehow connect with her estranged father or do something? You know, what if she had some kind of motive?
I think
man,
Moby
it's
Dick
your movie.
Is...
It's your movie going experience. If you want to buy into that bull. Godspeed, but okay. No way a middle school child is choosing to read Moby Dick.
Well,
no way a middle school is assigning Moby Dick. Like,
that's why it's a cheat, because you think it is the college student
writing
it. And even though the writing is rudimentary, and when you hear it, you're like, yeah, it sounds like a middle schooler wrote it. Because when I was hearing back, I'm like, that's not a very well-written essay. It sounds like a kid wrote it. But then I'm like, well, he's teaching class. I mean, there are students that just aren't as good, and they're working on it. So, but that's the thing. That's the twist, though. And what you say, I totally agree with that, Tom, because it sounded like a kid wrote it. But I think they had to make the assignment Moby Dick, because you presumed, oh, college student was writing an essay on Moby Dick. And then, we'd need an explanation for why was the middle schooler actually writing it.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense a child of that age is reading Moby Dick.
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't choose to read it either.
That book is legendary for being dense and boring and replete with metaphors that just don't interest the average reader. Like, if you ask someone to name a really long book that will probably bore the crap out of them, they're going to say Moby Dick or War and Peace.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay, fair.
It is. You'd think, and that's the other problem I think that I have with this movie, is there are moments where his daughter, Sadie, is it Swank?
You say so.
The gal from, it's Max from Stranger Things.
Sadie Sink.
And she is bad in this. I think...
I don't think she's that bad.
Oh, I think she's bad. And her character... her character has one note, which is screeching.
Yeah.
And it was angry.
Anger.
Yeah.
And that's the only way, as an actress, she chooses to express anger. There are other ways to express
that's
anger.
True.
Anyone who's been married can tell you that.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So, no, I don't think it's a good performance. There are moments
with her where I do feel like she's doing something different. Like at the very end, when he's basically bearing his soul to her, and she doesn't know how to, like, she doesn't know what to do with what she's being told. And she does do like the shrieking anger part, but there is a moment where she gets to the door and she just like kicks her head back. And she was like, you know, like, Daddy, what do you need me to, you know, there's a softness to that anger, but we don't get that until the last 5 minutes of this movie, where the entire time she is probably kind of awful.
90 seconds.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, her character doesn't let up. She's horrible the entire movie until you see, I mean, she's hurt and she's dealing with stuff, and she just wants her dad at that point. She doesn't want her dad to die. She says it. She says some really mean, horrible things. I can't wait till you just die. Just die. I hate you.
I did kind of chuckle when she's like, imagine the grease fire when this guy dies. And I was like, oh, dang, that's really mean, but that's really funny.
And then his character's like, she's not wrong. I mean, he just kept giving. He was so desperate in seeking her attention because of his. I mean, clearly he's in a terrible place where he hates himself. He's trying to kill himself by eating. He does not care. He believes he deserves this punishment, and so he just ultimately doesn't care. Like, what happens to him, or no matter what people say about him, he's like, they're right. And he's so self-loathing. But I do think that there is something to take away from the fact that clearly just because he messed up does not mean he deserves to die morbidly obese. I mean, I do think there is a connection with this character. People can beat themselves up, and yeah, he made some bad moves, but clearly doesn't deserve the life he's living.
No, he doesn't. He's punishing himself, is what he's doing. But at the same time,
which I feel like is a very, I don't know, this feels like a religious thing, some kind of self.
Oh, I don't think
the phrase you're looking for is self-flagellation.
Yeah, just because I know
that. Farting on yourself. I get it.
No, that's flatulation.
Yeah. Oh, right. Sorry,
but to me, I kind of drew that parallel again because of all the religious undertones and the way that Aronofsky goes in these movies to me. I don't know. And obviously, there's other religious things like gluttony that counteract some of this. But I don't know. To me, it just felt like the punishing yourself for doing something that you shouldn't have was kind of a...
But that's the confusing part is like, what is he... He didn't do anything, right? Like,
well,
I can understand leaving
that's
your
not
family.
True. He left his... He abandoned his family and he began a sexual/romantic relationship with a student.
Yeah.
Now,
after they graduated.
Okay.
Class.
But he met him during
Now you get into the grooming aspects of how much was he during that time frame. But I think a larger problem I have with the storyline is it's getting harder and harder. And this is ultimately a good thing for society, but it's a bad thing for the narrative of this film. It's getting increasingly difficult to have the motivating factor being like, I was ashamed of my homosexuality, right? And it's not like this movie takes place in roughly the present day. They said it in 2016, some reason, but still, like, it's, you know, it's not like, so when they're going back to like, he was so ashamed of his homosexuality, like, we're going back to the crazy days of yesteryear, all the way back in 2008, right?
Ashamed of it, though?
Well, he was ashamed of it, I think, during his marriage. And he married a woman, lived life as a heterosexual. I'm not saying he's ashamed of it in the present day, but I think he was certainly ashamed of it throughout his...
He was closeted, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't read it that way, is that he was ashamed of it in that way. I think that he didn't maybe know, and then I mean, you know, not know for sure. I do think he had feelings for the wife. I don't think he, because they even have that line, like, you were just with her to have a kid or whatever. And he's like, no, like, I don't think he did just
well
do it for that.
I see, that's where I'm gonna disagree with you. Her statement, I think, is true. I think he was trying to live a life that society told him was the norm. And that's what he was trying. You know, yes, he got married to a woman and he had a child because that's what society expected him to do. Now, to Tom's point, in 2008, do I think that people still struggled with that? Absolutely. But I don't think it was as commonplace as it would have been in 1997. If that makes sense.
It just seemed like he did it, right? Like, it wasn't a secretive thing. Like, he just dropped and left them for a man. So to me, it wasn't so much an aspect of being secretive. I think he didn't, like, wasn't sure. And then he followed his heart because he's like, yeah, he figured out this being with a woman isn't for me. And he handled it wrong by abandoning them. But I mean, to me, it wasn't a shame thing, because I'm like, he did it. He wasn't ashamed. He left and then went on trips and took pictures with the guy. And he wasn't...
I think he was very ashamed of it in relationship to them. Like, you know, like, he has this new world where he's not ashamed of being gay. But, and I don't even necessarily think in that respect he's ashamed of being gay as much as he's ashamed of walking away from his family, which he should be.
I agree. I think the shame came from what he did, which was leaving them.
But I feel like there must have been shame attached leading into it, or he wouldn't have just ran away like that.
I can see that.
But, I'm just saying, in today's world, it's getting a lot harder to have that be the motivating factor for a character, because it's getting increasingly difficult to pretend like, oh, I didn't know I was gay, or because it's a lot more acceptable in society. So it's not, you know, it used to be for some people, it really was just an alien concept that it was even an option, let alone allowed. And so it's, you're really having to do some narrative backflips these days to make that seem plausible.
Well, I think you have to. I think you have to add the religious element. Like, I think when you, if you're going to tell that story, part of the element you have to, as like a devout religious person that is now struggling with not only how they're feeling on the inside, but like how they're going to reconcile that with their own faith. A faith that, for the most part, is telling you that's not okay.
Sure.
Right? And Christianity, well, this is a whole, oh boy. I grew up Catholic, and it was never really something that was talked about. And in recent, I don't know, what, the last 5 years since the new rock star Pope took over, he has changed that stance. And that is what it is, but I don't think that's...
Well, he hasn't changed it, but he softened it.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Definitely softened the Catholic Church stance on things.
Well, let's see what the next guy does.
That's also true.
Which looks like we're going to find out in about 2 weeks.
I think you're about right. But yeah, that one, the new guy's like, hey, you know all that stuff that the other guy did? Forget it.
Yeah.
We're going back to the olden times.
Swing back the other way.
Who knows?
But, you know, I think this may be...
I've never heard of a priest swinging both ways before.
So it may be kind of a cheat with the narrative. And to your point, Tom, that I think the reason why, and then, you know, the whole character and story is based on this, but the reason he left his family for a man was so you don't totally hate him. If he cheated on his family, if he cheated on his wife and left his family for another woman, he's a terrible person. But if he's following his heart and realizing that he's gay and that he would have been unhappy living a lie, so I think the film used it as a, you're supposed to connect with him for it.
Yeah. It's a way to let him off the hook for committing adultery and abandoning his family like that. And I have a lot of problems with this movie, but that's one of them, is that the narrative cheats just start piling on top of themselves like ranch dressing on a pizza.
Ew.
Ew. I hate that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he did, right? Like, that's... that's
I'm team ranch.
Oh, I hate ranch salad dressing. The smell of it makes me want to hurl.
That's what I'm saying. If I smell it, like Katie eats it, and if I smell it when she's eating it, it really does make me feel nauseous.
Trust me. Both my youngest is like, can I put ranch on this piece of dog shit? I'm like, well, don't eat the dog shit.
Just lick the ranch off the dog.
Lick the ranch off the dog shit. That's a John Caparulo joke. I can't take credit for that.
Dang it. See, we keep getting look,
I know that I can't take credit for that. I will watch just the most depraved horror slasher films all day long, and they don't bother me at all. That scene of him eating, I was like, this is gross. It was so gross.
And it was like, it felt deliberately cruel as a filmmaker to depict it that way. Like, it's it feels like a commentary on fat people.
That's interesting.
I do, especially like, he bites into a chicken breast like it's an apple.
Yeah.
And like, and he's basically rubbing the grease all over his face. And it's just like, that's just not how people eat. Not even overweight people.
Not even if you're binging.
Yeah, like that's right.
That was a choice of him playing the character who wanted to. Basically, if he died and choked on his meatball sandwich, he wouldn't really care. He was trying to kill himself, so he wasn't eating slow. He was taking big bites. It wasn't just that he was fat. It was that he was ready, really, to just have it be his last moment. Just read me the essay. He's like, I want that to be the last thing I hear, and I think he would have been happy to have it be
I don't disagree with you about that meatball sub scene. But the scene that Tom is talking about is that scene where he and Liz are sitting there and he is just like manhandling this piece of chicken. And he's eating it in a frenzy. Like a friend. That's a good way of putting it. It's like he's just trying to get it down his gullet as fast as he can.
He's a food berserker.
But it did seem almost like showing the addiction aspect of it, because he's like, Liz, please, like he seemed like an addict looking for a hit. And when he got the chicken, you saw this sigh of relief, you saw his shoulders kind of relax as he's sitting there, and then he starts biting into it. It's like he needed the food because it had become such a crutch, which, you know, I can see that, where this is more of a commentary on eating. But I don't know. I think it helped to get you into the character to understand where this guy's at. Like, how did he become this big? And he just started eating like that, like without even thinking, without chewing, without it, you just taking huge bites.
Yeah. Well, but, the scene that is later, I don't remember why he went. So was it because the pizza delivery guy like stayed and looked at him that he went crazy?
When he's eating the pizzas out of the fridge,
like,
and he's
when he's
putting,
eating like the like putting slices on top of slices.
Because I think a new person saw him for the first time, and it was a look of disgust and shame, and that to me that was suicide by eating. He was trying to kill himself.
Oh,
there's
for
no
sure.
other way that I could take that scene is that it was trying to just eat so much that he would die because of his heart problems, and when he would do any kind of activity, or I think sometimes when he would eat this unhealthy food, it would just like trigger the heart stuff, and I think he was trying to trigger a heart attack.
He was trying to do whatever he could.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. So we should say, I guess, just to give you a brief rundown, Brendan Fraser plays this
and
guy.
It's Fraser, who, remember.
It's Fraser, sorry. Yeah. But I will say, I guess I don't really know what happened to
what
him. As in his career, like I was trying to figure this out. So he does, right? He's kind of the hot new thing with Encino Man, George of the Jungle,
Fraser's
Dudley
career.
Dude.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Not the whale. So it's Encino Man, or I guess School Ties is kind of the one that I've seen people go
I
back
think he
to recently.
Bad movies, you know, after a while,
but he didn't though.
Monkey Bone.
But that's in the middle. Like that's a weird...
I know, but he made all these movies, but then like George of the Jungle, not a good movie, even if people love it. Monkey Bone, he just started making these commercial flops.
But he rebounds after Monkey Bone because Monkey
that's
Bone
the mummy,
is before
right?
The Mummy.
I mean, he did get The Mummy. But that's the way. Like what else was there? I mean, The Mummy for sure.
So the Mummy and The Mummy 2.
Did The Mummy
and then
get
he does...
bad? Like the third one, is that not...
That's not good, but that's on the tail end. That's where things start to go south a little bit. So it's the Mummy 2, Journey to the Center of the Earth.
That's good. Journey 2 is Journey.
No, he's
and
in
I,
Journey. Oh,
okay. I take that back. Monkey Bone is after the Mummy, so the Mummy's 99.
Okay.
Monkey Bone is 2001. But yeah, like so, he does the Mummy, and then he does Dudley Do Right.
Say
followed,
bad.
Followed, and he does a Sinbad animated movie, and then
which
Bedazzled.
I don't
Bedazzled.
That's I like that movie.
So that
that's a fun movie.
But it tanked. Monkey Bone tanks, and then Mummy Returns, and then The Quiet American, which I think is art house, but I don't remember it. And then he's like basically he's on a search for his next tentpole picture because then
he has
Looney Tunes Back in Action, which tanks.
No, but I got to tell you, I will tell you, that's a Joe Dante Looney Tunes movie.
Yeah,
that is insanely good.
But it does not do well.
It does not do well. Yeah, I'm almost positive.
Insanely
that's
insanely good.
That's the Joe Dante one. That's like leans into.
No, Looney. That's a bad Space Jam 2. It's Space Jam 2. Looney Tunes Back in Action. Space Jam 2.
No, it's
what that.
Oh, you're saying it's on that level.
It's like, but I mean, that's like, yeah, it's like following the success of Space Jam. They did. Looney Tunes Back in Action, and that's not good. There's no way that's good.
I need to rewatch it. I remember thinking it was like, oh yeah, Joe Dante doing an actual Looney Tunes movie.
It has a 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb, so
I'll have to rewatch that.
So okay. Anyway, from there he goes into his art house run. He does Crash, which was a hit and won the Oscar, but everybody hates it. It's the Nickelback of Oscar bait.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Journey to the End of the Night, The Last Time. I've never even heard of these movies. And then The Air I Breathe, which I guess is...
sounds artsy.
Yeah, it sounds artsy.
Journey's a fun kids movie. After
so
that,
then Journey
though.
To the Center of the Earth, but then The Rock takes that franchise away from him.
Because he didn't want to do... Isn't that the deal? Is that they wanted to bring for Journey 2? He was coming back... But Brendan Fraser wanted the director from the first one to come back.
Oh, is that
said,
the one he quit
they
for?
Said,
I think
and he
you're
said,
right.
No, I'm not doing it.
You're right.
Oh, no, we won't. And then he quit. And
I believe
the
so.
Rock
he stood his
over.
Ground for him, yeah.
And so The Rock took his franchises twice.
and then from there, he pivots into basically what appear to be movies made entirely for the purposes of tax shelters.
Sure.
And so
sure,
that's
sure.
where you get Extraordinary Measures. That him and Harrison Ford and some sort of medical science drama, and then Furry Vengeance, you know,
and that's kind
of
where it stops. Like Furry
Escape
Vengeance,
from
I
Planet
think is
Earth,
like,
it's an animated movie that's just generic animated.
Okay. Yeah. But that's, yeah. that that Furry Vengeance seems to be the nail, well, the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, and then from there on out, he's basically just taken work.
Yeah, right.
For lack of a
TV
better.
Shows, and it's only like one or two episodes. Like, it doesn't look like he's on it. The Affair looks like he's on it for six episodes. So it's just, it's an interesting, and then he kind of, to me, he finds this new resurgence with Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like Doom Patrol, they show up on Titans, which thank God that got canceled. And then Doom Patrol, if you haven't seen it, I do recommend it. It's crazy, but it's like the crazy side of the DC.
Well, you won't
universe.
See it next season.
That's true. You get three seasons, I think.
Yeah, I think the third's done, but then they didn't renew it after that.
Which, I mean, with the James Gunn thing, that seems to be...
Yeah, they got to get their stuff on track. Because the thing is, I know that it sucks, and people are like, oh, we liked the show, and it could be a good show. That's fine, but look what Marvel's doing. It all ties in. They can't have Doom Patrol be its own thing, even if you like it. Titans be its own thing. I mean, it just can't, even if you like these shows.
I know this isn't part of this, the whale, but what is interesting is that James Gunn has said, we want everything to tie in together, but the Marvel games don't tie into anything.
The games?
The PS4 Spider-Man game doesn't tie into the MCU at all.
Yeah, I mean, games don't necessarily have to. I mean, I know that they're a huge medium now, and they could, but I mean, I think it's mainly TV. They want you to sign up to HBO Max, just like you sign up to Disney, so you can watch Loki and all the, and Captain.
So it can get Winter canceled
Soldier
before you watch it. You can get taken off the whole thing.
Not before they make it.
That's right. Yeah. So we're gonna put it together, but then never show it to you.
Exactly. I know. And he's supposed to be in Batgirl, but that got scrapped.
That got scrapped. Yeah. He was going to be
I don't know if you say A-lister, but he was popular movie. You know, everybody wanted.
Did you see
him.
The interview he did with Sandler? Sandler did that.
Where he said his name's Fraser.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Where Sandler was like, you were supposed to be one of us. Like when they were doing Airheads, you were supposed to be one of us, and then you went and got ripped and got shredded, and then you did George of the Jungle, and he was like, and then you weren't. And I do kind of think, as I was listening to that, I was like, man, is he taking shots at him, like in this interview where he was like, you were supposed to be one of us, and then you left us behind?
I don't think so. I think he was being self-deprecating.
Yes, I think that's exactly. Yeah. But initially, it was like, oh man,
because Sandler didn't do anything really until Punch Drunk Love was his first serious movie.
Yes.
Sandler was doing goofy goofball stuff, so he's like, you're supposed to be doing Airheads movies with us, and you went off and did big
Crash
action movies
or whatever.
And stuff,
I mean, but really, he kind of, it's a similar trajectory, or at least what he was attempting, to Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, doing the goofball comedy thing to action star. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that man, that Chris Pratt.
All right, the career is a weird thing.
He could just go away for a little bit.
But he's back. People love this performance. So in this movie, his friend Liz, we should mention, is a nurse. She takes care of him. Again, we don't know their relationship for a while, and then we finally find out that her brother is the guy that he left his wife and daughter for.
Her brother is the lead scientist from Jurassic Park, because his name is Alan Grant.
I did as a Jurassic Park fan. I saw that, and I was like,
Kevin loved it.
I know.
Kevin loved every part of that.
Funny. I was like, where's this going? But I do remember now. Yes, that was funny.
I was like, B.D. Wong?
What? Well, that's where I went too, and then I'm like, is this racist? I thought,
No, his name is Kev Alan Grant.
Sorry, we just jumped. We presumed that you're a big racist, Joe. So.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah. But Liz is the gal from Downsizing, right?
She's the one that we just saw in The Menu and Downsizing, which I love. That's Hong Chau.
Right. But yeah, she is like his not official in-house nurse, but she is like.
But you don't know why she's doing it, and clearly she cares for him. And the reason, spoilers that we find out, is that she's like that last connection to her brother. Her brother, who basically took his own life, because I think that's more the shame, right? The brother was ashamed because he's in this religious family and he's gay.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he killed himself out of shame, and now.
Oh, he absolutely did. I mean, she says that like he had this.
That
you
new
know,
life ruined his life.
Yeah. So Liz's adopted father is the pastor of like this cultish religious sect, I guess, where her brother.
It's an end of the world thing, is how they describe
it.
Yeah.
That's it's a doomsday cult.
One of these,
how you would describe
it. God's going to come wipe out and start over type thing.
Right. So the brother had this whole life planned out for him. There was a woman inside the church that the father had arranged a marriage, and but he ended up, the brother, Alan, ended up falling in love with Charlie, Brendan Fraser's character. And he comes back from this mission, and he kind of walks away from the church, and because of that, he is pushed into a spiral of depression and anxiety and all of the above, and he ends up, yeah, he stops eating, and he becomes very sick, and he ends up taking his own life, and that's the shame that I guess the brother is dealing with, that also Brendan Fraser, I think, deals with as well, right? He's like, I was his partner, and if I only loved him enough, I thought if I loved him hard enough, that...
That would be enough.
It would be enough. And yeah. It wasn't enough.
And and that scene that when Hong Chao is going through and at the end talking with the missionary, right? When she's talking about what happened and all this.
The kid from Iron Man 3?
That's the kid from Iron Man 3?
That's the kid from Iron Man
3. No way.
Yeah.
He actually grew up to do something else. Okay.
Yeah, remember we see him at the end of Endgame.
He brought him back. That's right.
Yeah. But that is the same kid.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't recognize it. But, I mean, that's a really heartbreaking scene, and she's a great actor, and she's going through and talking about losing her brother and Charlie, and then, you know, she's like, stay away, he doesn't need this. She kept saying throughout the whole movie that, like, just stay away from him. Doesn't need this right now. And then she ends up saying, like, he's going to be dead. Like, don't come back because he's going to be dead in a few days or however she words it. And then Charlie's sitting there in the doorway and you're just like, oh, gut punch.
But Tom has brought this up before, like the Alfred Hitchcock, we know the bomb is under the desk thing. So they give you a timeline. Like, they give you a day when we first see Charlie jerking off and have that heart episode where it's a Tuesday. And she says he's going to be dead in a week. And it's like there's a ticking clock.
That's true.
And we get to I don't think it's the next Tuesday, but it's not long after.
It was kind of weird the way they told the timeline like that, because I did see the days, like I saw them, and then I kind of forgot about it. I'm like, what are we doing here?
Because
I don't need days for this. Like, are you? Yeah. And I'm like, you don't need days to keep track of, like, we know it's not a month in the future. Like, we could just presume it's like within.
I thought of it as just a countdown clock.
Yeah, but that's a good point, though, and I didn't take that way because I was questioning, why are we even showing days of the week like that? But
in the countdown clock aspect is kind of dumb because, yes, he's having congestive heart failure and the clock is ticking, but it's not.
Know.
But you don't know. Like, right, it will be on exactly the seventh day that he will.
Right. There's no countdown clock for that. It's just it could have been the second day.
Well, I wonder religious part, right? Like, the Lord made the world in 7 days.
Could be,
you know, and like I, and again, that's me reaching, because
yeah, sure.
But
you got to do a lot of reaching to make this movie work.
Yeah, because he can't take a shower.
Away all that reading into it and the religious aspect and all that, which is obviously very heavy. That's part of what he does in his movies now. But as a study on humanity, as a character study of Charlie and his depression and his self-loathing and the hurt that he's going through and Fraser's excellent performance, like I really appreciated that part of it. Not trying to read all heavy into religious and stuff, but like, I don't know, I was into what his performance was doing, and I feel like people do beat themselves up and take blame for things that they don't necessarily have any effect on. That doesn't matter, it's not, like we said before, just obesity, but you know, you can connect with making the wrong move or making a mistake and beating yourself up over it, and I appreciated that humanity of the character.
It was an art house after school special.
It kind of was,
I felt like also that character, Brendan Fraser's character, would have had more anger. Like, I think his character would have been mad at the boyfriend, right? Like,
for taking his own life.
Yeah, he threw his life away,
right,
to go be with this guy, and then he kills himself. Like, sure. I think you would be really pissed off that he did that.
I think maybe he would, but I also don't think that's Charlie, right? Like, there's people that are just timid and beat themselves up and take the blame for everything. And as what we saw was, he just the self-loathing. He just hated himself, and there wasn't anger. The only anger we see is at the very end when he starts talking to the religious guy, because he gets mad because the missionary at the very end of the movie, when he finally like thinks that he's like figured out and connects the dots and he's going to get his life back with the church and everything, he's basically like, you just need to accept the Lord because because your boyfriend didn't, and God took his life because he didn't accept the Lord. And you know, and that was like, holy crap.
Yeah, you dummy.
You're like, gonna say, like, are you doing? Charlie was gonna kill him. I really thought that it was going to come down to like a murderous, because we don't see Charlie angry, and he gets angry at this part.
He was going to put that kid into a fat suit, and they were going to fight like a couple of walruses.
Speaking of fat suit, I thought this fat suit, I looked bad. Like, I haven't seen.
I didn't think so either.
I didn't think it looked believable
at
all.
Really, I mean, I thought
it looked like a weird Al video.
I thought the proportions were weird, but I didn't see any of the seams. You know, I thought he blended in with the suit, and
I just thought it looked really rubbery and fake.
Oh, I didn't.
It
get
did.
That
it
from
definitely
it.
Looked. I don't disagree about the rubberiness of it. So there are moments where I was like, man, is that CG? Because when you look at his face. It did kind of look like his face was CG'd onto something.
They probably touch up
something.
Everything with CG these days.
They
That's
probably
just,
do.
Yeah.
But how tall is he normally?
He's big. He's a big guy. That's the thing.
Okay, so
like,
he's naturally
huge.
A big dude,
he's
right?
He's tall, yeah.
Okay, so that one scene when he stands up for the first time, and I was like, God. Damn,
I think that's why he was a big
dude.
Ripped like George of the Jungle. You know, he's a tall guy.
Okay.
When you get buff, he's got the Alexander Skarsgård thing, you know?
He had the Alexander Skarsgård.
Well, right, but when he was that same age or whatever, and he was
ripped.
Like, you know, tall and
can't all be Tom Cruise and never age.
Right,
well,
exactly.
You know, enough Scientology and baby blood, you'll be all right. Yeah, so, but there is that scene. He, like, when he does stand up for the first time, I was like, God dang, like, that dude is a massive. And of course, like, when he's sitting down, I don't think you got the magnitude of how big he was.
Yeah.
Until he stands up and you're like, okay, this is obviously what the title's about. Like, I mean, I get it now, a little on the nose, but I understand.
Yeah. But that's what I thought too. Like, I get that there's a deeper meaning with the whale, and it's about this, keeps going back to the essay about Moby Dick, but then they are saying he's the whale.
Right.
So a literal, like, size wise. I just thought that's just kind of weird to do in 2023 or 2022 when this movie released, right? Like, he's a huge guy, and the movie's called The Whale. And even though there is a meaning other than just him, but they're also, he is the whale.
It also feels like it's trying to have it both ways, to where if you point that out, it's going to, they're going to turn back around and be like,
no.
Well, that's not what we said.
You're putting that on the movie.
But there's no way they make a movie about a morbidly obese person. It just feels weird this day and age, because no matter how much meaning and allegories and things that you put into it, you're at the end of the day, you're like, oh, the whale.
And that's why, like, the depiction of the film, like, it just, so many parts of this film just come across as cruel. Not the characters being cruel, but the filmmakers being cruel. I don't like the way that they would mic him when he ate.
Yeah.
So you could hear every slurp and chew, like, which I just hate in general, but it just, everything seemed to be created to make you be disgusted by him, and then be like, and then try and
have sympathy for him.
Try to shame you for being
thinking
disgusted
that way.
By it.
But sure. You're not wrong at all in that aspect. But the other thing is too, it's like, if you're going to make this movie, what else is the point? Like, it's a hard line to balance. It's about an overweight guy, and you're trying to tap into this way this character feels about himself. He thinks he's disgusting, and he keeps asking people, do you think I'm disgusting? And so the audience is supposed to be judging him, so then you can look inwards and question as yourself, do you feel this way? And so I get what you're saying, but it's like, if you make this movie, that's the problem. Why make this movie? But if you if you do, you have to kind of put those elements in, because that's the movie they're trying to make. Right?
Yeah, but then why? Because here's the thing. Like, what was the Netflix movie we saw where they were running the scam at nursing homes?
Oh, that was a great movie. I think
the Rosamund Pike one.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it now.
But yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
But her character's a lesbian, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
We talked about the fact that if that movie had been made 20 years ago, it would have felt like a commentary about lesbians.
Right.
But now, because you see so much more representation in film, you can make a movie like that and not have it necessarily be, look at what the lesbians are doing. Right. Right?
Sure,
but
sure, sure.
You don't get movies about people of this size or even bigger people who aren't maybe necessarily this big, right? Because this is an anomaly even among overweight people. When you do get a movie about a character like this and it's all the slurping and the chewing and I'm the fat guy and like, aren't I disgusting? It now does play like a commentary on anybody with a BMI over a certain number. And,
sure.
And I just don't think there's a way to not read it that way. And I think it's naive and deliberately obtuse for the filmmakers to pretend like people won't see it that way.
Isn't Shallow Hal like getting some guff now?
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, absolutely.
It's not, it, you know, when it came out, it was what it was. Like, it was just, you know, a stupid Jack Black comedy. But now it's like, that's kind of a cruel movie.
Yeah,
sure.
So I just, to your point, Tom, I think you're onto something. Is like, yeah. you can't do these kind of, I mean, you can, but there, you got to,
yeah,
be
nobody's
pretty,
going to arrest you, but,
right.
But you're going to get pushback.
You're going to get pushback. Yeah, for sure.
Like when we got to the end of the movie, to touch on your point about size and stuff. So he's teaching this class. Basically, after his boyfriend died, after Alan Grant dies on the island fighting dinosaurs.
Killed by the T-Rex, I get it.
After he dies, he goes into this depression. He starts eating, and we find out that like that triggered all the eating and his obesity and everything. And so he's a teacher, but he, because of his disability, he's teaching online classes now.
Right.
And from the very beginning, we see that when he's teaching the class on what appears to be Zoom, one of those teleconferencing softwares, his picture's blacked out.
It's,
and he lies.
It's Zop. It's Zop.
Like, yeah, there you go with that. Top. And it's Moose. So
trademark real spoilers. Yeah.
He tells the class that, oh, my webcam is still broken on my computer. And clearly he's ashamed of the way he looks. At the end of the movie, what it comes down to is he's like, I'm not going to lie to you. Everyone else will lie to you. We're trying to get you to write all these papers and do these stupid assignments that don't mean anything. You need to write about the truth. He says, just write something that's true. And they end up writing these things, and he reads them and says, yes, yes, you know, this is great, the truth. And
then he gets fired for it?
Well, yeah, because he said basically, F all these assignments, whatever. I mean, he like went against the whole curriculum and just said, school is dumb. Just write your feelings. And they're like, yeah, you can't do that. But on their last class, I guess, or he gets them all together somehow, whatever.
He's basically, I think he's been fired, and he's like, well, I guess I'm fired, so.
But maybe they didn't know it yet, and he came on to say, like, yeah, I'm not going to be here, but here, you know, let me read some of your last assignments. And then he says, you know, I'm telling you need to be truthful, and I haven't been truthful with you. And then, of course, I mean, we knew this was coming. Like, I was like, at the beginning of the movie, I'm like, well, that webcam's going to come on by the end.
Of course.
And so,
yeah, that's
in this
given.
Way, he decides to be truthful, and he turns on the webcam, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I don't know. I would have no reaction to that. He's overweight.
I would have zero. Like when they're all taking pictures
those
of it,
people,
and I was like, "What?
Extras,
who the fuck
those
cares?"
Extras. I mean, I would be like, "Oh yeah, it's an overweight." Like,
It's not like he portrayed himself as some thin, athletic guy. It's just a voice. He's just a disembodied voice.
That was a weird thing where I thought that was maybe a little mean or a little ridiculous. Like, I do think in I guess 2016 or whatever, but I think in current days, you know. People that are overweight, I mean, the average person is overweight, right? Like, we live in a society now where I think we're pretty used to people being overweight. One way or another, it's just, I don't think...
Unless you're Tom, and you just start dropping like crazy.
I know, right? He's screwing the average up.
I spent the first 50 years overweight. Then, so.
But I just don't think that if this guy came on the camera that you'd be that shocked.
Agree wholeheartedly. I think most people's reaction would have been like, oh... That's why he kept the camera off all the time.
Right.
That's kind of sad.
Yep.
And then the
taking pictures of the screen.
Yeah, the reaction.
Like,
it was a commentary. Like, I think that's ridiculous because they made everyone basically like a horrible person. And maybe they are trying to get you to look at yourself. But I don't think people in general are that horrible on that level. That's like 100% of people, if they saw fat guy, would be taking pictures. That's not.
Because if you hear people, larger people or people that are this large, they will talk about people looking at them or making cracks. So I don't want to deny that experience for those people because I am absolutely sure that those assholes are out there. But
I'm not denying it either. Right?
Yeah, but I also don't think that, like you said, 100% of the people in that class would have reacted that way. And also, I think if anything, you would have lessened the number because now it's not just a random stranger you're seeing on the street who's large.
Yeah,
it's a person you've been interacting with and developed a relationship and presumably a respect for, because he seems like he was a good teacher, developed a respect for. And then when you see that, I think, you know, at least one person in that class is going to maybe have a gut check about what they
like. What are you guys doing?
About,
what are you doing?
About how they think about people like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure,
and exactly. And I get the whole thing of, too, like, even to your point, if you try to give the benefit of the doubt and be like, well, you've been in this class and you hear them, and then of course you're painting a picture, right? Like when you hear a voice, you think of what the person looks like and it doesn't always match. But I don't think that your reaction would be that visceral. The way they did it was, I thought, kind of weird, because I was thinking of myself and I was just like, if I saw someone that I didn't know but, you know, thought maybe they looked weird and they're big, I would be like, oh, and then I'd be like, oh, that's why he did the webcam thing. Like, my first thought wouldn't be like, oh my God, like,
look
just,
at the size of that guy.
Yeah, so I just thought that was kind of weird. I didn't like that.
I think, you know, I've rewatched Joker probably in the last 6 months. And
you're talking
about
Suicide Squad, the Joker in that, right?
No.
Because you love that movie.
I don't love that movie.
You wanted to watch it before HBO deleted it from existence.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like I don't own it. And I've kind of reversed my feeling on that movie.
Well, did you do a reverse or just one reverse?
I honestly don't. I thought I enjoyed it
at first, didn't you?
Yeah. So okay,
and then lately you've said you don't like
that. That is how I feel about it. I still feel that way. I think his performance is amazing. Yeah. It is a next level performance. The content of that movie is a little It is problematic. I kind of feel the same way about this movie. Is the content isn't problematic, but his performance is next level. I think this is a lesser actor giving a lesser performance, I am with Tom 100%. But given his performance, I was at least interested in what he was doing in that role. So that kind of saved the movie for me.
I know that that whole thing is another tangent, but I still think it's weird. It's a tricky thing with the Joker thing because, yes, you could say there's problematic stuff in that movie, but that movie is basically Taxi Driver, and everyone loves Taxi Driver, but that character's super problematic.
Yeah.
He's the same.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's like an incel, like an incel idol. Like, oh, just go and you get the woman, and if not, just start shooting people. And he's a problematic character from the 70s.
I think that, I don't want to say the difference, but I think the problem you run into is that there can be a thin line between making a movie about a character who isn't good and making a movie about a character who isn't good and you're supposed to like them.
But I don't think you are, right? And people
I don't think you are either.
And I think from it. Yeah.
And I think because it's the Joker, like,
oh, sure.
People are like, but I still want to wear my T-shirt with the Joker on it. And it's right. Like, well,
and
but
you know what? You can wear the T-shirt with the Brian Boland Joker on it.
Right. But
not
you're still
this version.
But you're still at the end of the day wearing a T-shirt with a serial killer on it. Right.
Yeah, like, a man who murdered a child.
And Taxi Driver, spoiler for Taxi Driver, it kind of ends up becoming a meta commentary on itself because, you know, within the context of the film, Travis Bickle becomes a hero in the media, and we know that he is not a hero, that he did one thing if you edit out a lot of everything that came before and everything that's probably going to come after, and you look at this, you know, 90 second window, this guy can look like a hero, but you know, but he was a stalker.
I think the term incel is pretty spot on.
He's like a hero, like an incel hero that they would worship, right? And so I think the Joker became that for a modern audience. But it's like, if you have a problem with the Joker, you kind of have to have a problem with Taxi Driver. And
I think that's another next level performance,
right?
You know, and
that's my favorite Scorsese movie. It's great.
Are you for real?
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah, it's
a great
movie.
Your favorite Scorsese movie?
One of them for sure. What's yours?
Okay.
Like the mobster ones?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, Casino is kind of where I would probably fall.
King of Comedy, which is also problematic for the same, and Taxi Driver are my favorites.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Goodfellas, I think, is probably his most, and it's also his most accessible.
Right. It's like, his popcorn movie. Very good, accessible.
Goodfellas is good
but
stuff.
But anyway, so with this movie, in the
Although people always forget about Cape Fear because it's a remake. Man. But goddamn, does that movie work?
That's a great
movie.
I always think of that as a De Palma movie.
Yeah.
In my head. I don't know why.
I don't think that's crazy.
That's a great movie, too. And, you know, one of my favorites, After Hours.
Oh.
It's been so long since I've seen that one.
Oh, my gosh. It's like a comedy Scorsese movie. It's like a dark comedy. This guy just goes on this crazy evening of just one thing after another. Whatever could go wrong goes wrong, and it is so freaking good and so hilarious. Go watch After Hours, but it doesn't feel like a Scorsese movie. Like Scorsese, when you look back, and you know, especially people go, oh, he just makes mobster movies, go look at the eclectic catalog of Scorsese movies and see that he has dark comedy and pool movie and mobster, and then these street crime,
Last Temptation of Christ,
right? Yeah, I mean, Raging Bull. He is not just a one note director. He's made a lot, and sure, he doesn't make superhero movies, but he's made all sorts of genres of movies.
Did he do Cruisin'?
No,
is that not him?
Okay, that's Pacino though.
Yeah, Pacino's in that, but that's not okay. Scorsese.
But yeah, so it's just the whole movie is about Charlie and finding out why he hates himself. The daughter, he convinces the daughter who he's estranged from that he left when she was 8 or whatnot. Now she's a high school senior. We find out that she is about to flunk out of high school and he wants to help her. And he says, hey, I've got all this money that I've been saving and you can have all of it, but I need you to come over here and I want to get to know you. I'll write your papers for you. You got to just, you know, not fail high school, essentially, is what he's getting to. And she's very angry, as Tom said. I mean, that's her one emotion.
Yeah.
I thought she was good because I thought it was believable. The anger to me, I was like, man, this is an angry kid. So I know that it was kind of one note, but to me, like I felt it. I thought she's an angry teenager that is lashing out. And so, but she does that, you know, when she visits him, she hates him. She doesn't want to be there. She's just like, write my paper for me. And he's like, you know, I need you to do something too. Why don't you write something? And I thought that haiku thing was funny.
It almost gave him a heart attack.
Well, anytime that he laughs, that's how unhealthy he is that even laughing puts him into like a heart.
Any sort of like physical movement.
Yeah. So she's coming around. The missionary kid's coming around. Liz is coming to take care of him. Liz says she can't be over. She doesn't want the missionary over there. She knows that he's dying and anything can trigger his, you know, his imminent death. And so she doesn't want anyone here. But he keeps having these characters over. And we just get to know him. We get to know these other characters. And then by the end, he kind of has a falling out with Liz because, and this is the thing I said halfway through the movie too, when he has $120,000 and he's going to give it to the daughter that I know he feels guilty, but the daughter that hates him, I'm like, Liz has been taking care of him this whole time. You're not going to leave her anything?
He has these moments where you're just like, okay, I'm on this guy's side, right? Yeah. Like, I get it. But and then he does that things that's just like, you dumbass.
I mean,
like,
give the daughter $60,000 or whatever, but I'm like, Liz is keeping you alive. She cares about you. And
the whole thing about the truck where I was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, just give her the money. Don't, you know, just give her the money for the truck.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. And, like, but again, this is a character that hates himself so much and blames himself. And now, especially since he sees the daughter, he's going to blame himself for not being there to raise her. And now she's become, you know, I mean, she's not a good kid, right? She's getting in fights.
No.
She's saying terrible things. And like, I mean,
she tries to ruin the
missionary kid.
The missionary kid.
Right. Yeah. And Charlie tries to, she was trying to help him. Clearly, she was trying to ruin this kid's life. The missionary got kicked out of his church, we find out, for smoking weed.
And stealing money.
And she is like, you don't smoke weed? And he's like, no, I've smoked weed before. And then we find out, like, that was a big problem that he had. And then she's trying to get him to do it. And then she's taking photos of him doing it. And eventually she sends them to his family, who he ran away from.
Right.
And also to say, like, he's here. He stole this money from the church and left. And she's trying to get him in trouble. But then at the end, Charlie's like convincing himself, no, she was doing it so he could go home.
Well, yeah, because the kid's like, you know, my parents reached out and they said it's just money and they want me back. Like, it, you know, It just happened to be that the parents were willing to forgive the kid
right.
rather than be vindictive. Yeah,
but she didn't know that.
It backfired on her daughter.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah,
so
she's
a terrible person. But, you know, Charlie is still clinging on to that. And again, any terrible nature that she has, he's saying he's to blame, right, for leaving. And so I get him wanting to give her the money. But, yeah, the Liz thing rubbed me the wrong way, and it also drove her away, because then Liz is clearly like my car broke down and I walked in the snow to get your groceries, and you had money where you could have done anything, called a taxi, fixed my truck, whatever, you know. And it's just that was bad.
Yeah, it was real bad,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Did anybody else have issues with the audio on this film?
Issues with the theater that I was in couldn't figure out the screen ratio.
Yeah, it's a 4:3 movie.
It is 4:3, but like they couldn't figure that out.
So like, what did it look like? Was it stretched or something?
They stretched
it was shrunken even more.
Oh, they took 16:9 and then within the 16:9 made it 4:3.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So they not only, and that's fine, right? Like I don't care about the 4:3, but it's like they cut off the top and bottom.
Right.
So yeah, I was like, is it supposed to look this way? And then when I saw it, when it said like a film by Darren Aronofsky, like it was just like half of the text.
So you know that it wasn't.
And I was like, well, that can't be right. And then about halfway through the movie, they fixed it. But I could hear the two jerk-offs in the booth.
So now there's three jerk-offs.
That's right. Yeah, no joke. So I can hear them talking about it. And I was like, will you shut the fuck up? Like, or walk backwards from the projector? Because I could hear every conversation you're having, you idiot.
I thought the audio sounded like it had been recorded in one language and then redubbed. Like,
oh, that's weird.
Like, none of it sounded like it was recorded on set to me. I thought it had a really weird sound to it.
I didn't get that.
No, I didn't get that either.
But the movie, so I'm guessing he chose the 4:3 for to make it feel claustrophobic. You got this big guy, and you know, it's not very open. You're not supposed to feel space. You're supposed to feel closed in like he feels. And the cinematographer is Matthew Labatique, who's a great cinematographer. Recently, he's done Don't Worry, Darling, Birds of Prey, A Star is Born. He did Mother. He's an Aronofsky guy. But he's done a lot of movies. He makes good-looking movies. Iron Man 2. The first Iron Man, actually.
Okay.
Inside Man. We talked about
that last week,
or a couple weeks ago. It's a great movie. So, good cinematographer. So, I thought the movie looked good and kept my attention for being a one location film. I don't know, the way it was filmed with very limited space, I did find it interesting to look at. It wasn't just point and shoot. You know, I thought the angles were good and.
Yeah. No, I thought that was fine. And I, you know, when you find out that this was a stage play, you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was not a shocker.
Not at all.
Right, which when we talk about chamber pieces and these films that take place in one location or plays, I mean, that's what a lot of times it's adapted from, a chamber piece like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I thought visually it was fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the end, he dies. That's what we knew was coming, right? I mean, it's going to happen.
And he doesn't squish Emma, or whatever her name is.
No, I mean, so Eliza, there's this one scene halfway through that we talked about where she's about to leave, and he's like, no, stay, I'll give you the money, whatever, just stay.
Right.
And she's like, walk over to me. And clearly he can't, and it's cruel, and again, she's a terrible person, and she says, walk over to me right now. And so he gets up and tries, he falls, he breaks his table, he hurts himself, and I think she walks away, and I mean, she's just mean, she leaves
him
there.
She slams the door and leaves, yeah.
Yeah, and so at the end of the movie, everyone's upset, he's gonna die, and we find out that she wrote the essay, and that's why it's so important to him. It's not the boyfriend's essay, but it was hers that she wrote in middle school, like Tom said. It's ridiculous as it is, or whatever,
while reading Moby Dick,
right? And so that's why he wanted her to read it, and he's like, read it to me, like, and if you want to help, read it to me. And so he wants that to be the last thing he hears or gets read to him or whatever. And so she's just like, no, and she's about to walk away, and that's when, like Joe said earlier, she has this change where she's like realizing, like, this is her dad, and as mad as she is, and as much as she says she hates him, like, it's her dad. She doesn't want him to die. She doesn't want to lose him. And she says, Daddy, you know, what can I do? And she reads him the thing. And this is while she's reading it, and they're describing the essay about Moby Dick. here he comes standing
up. He stands
up.
And he
starts
walking. And I was like, he's going to squish that girl. And that is the end of this movie ridiculous. Is he's going to fall on her and they're both going
to
die.
That'd be so ridiculous. But again, I mean, now I think this goes back to the religious aspect that like what he did and what the boyfriend did wasn't a sin. And even though he has distanced himself from religion, I mean, he lifts up, right? He took it as he's going to heaven.
No, that's exactly what that
is. He's free of his body.
Yeah. Correct. Oh, yeah. Because and the guy's like, oh, the only way you can find God and then you'll be free of your mortal body and you'll get a body made of light. And so that's what they describe happening. Even though he didn't care anything about religion, essentially it showed that that's what happened. So that's another weird read where it's like the missionary guy's forcing religion.
So he's right?
But yeah, right. It's like he was not good because he said your boyfriend died because he didn't accept God.
I didn't read it as that. I read it as just the more simplistic of like he's no longer cursed with this flesh suit that is weighing him down literally and figuratively.
I mean, yeah, sure. You could, but
which is also kind of ableist, like when
a little bit,
you know, when people take the kids in wheelchairs and they're like, you're free of your wheelchair.
Get up.
Yeah. But they did so much around religion and the visuals sounded like the description. He set a body of light and the screen goes white.
Oh, yeah. And he lifts off the ground.
I don't think that's necessarily a wrong read. I'm just saying I personally just saw it more as like, oh, he's free of his body. And that's as much as I thought as I gave to it because I was so ready for this movie to be over.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, movie.
It's an impressive performance from him, from Brendan Fraser, and that's what I took away from it. Is like, okay, like this guy can still go. He's kind of the, you know, he's not the. It is weird to see him in interviews because he is like the. I mean, he comes off as like the most humble dude.
For sure.
You could possibly talk. And there are moments.
He doesn't
come
across like the guy that was the star of The Mummy, right? He doesn't come
across
like hot stuff.
He does not come across that guy.
He's very, looks very friendly, very humble, very thankful.
And I wonder, there are moments in interviews where he doesn't talk about what happened in those years where he was gone, but he's kind of dropped hints sometimes. And I wonder how close this character is to maybe Brendan Fraser's own experience.
Or if he was able to easily tap into it because of similarities,
that's what I mean.
Right?
Yeah, like, there might be some similarities between Charlie and Brendan.
Which maybe is why it's such a truthful and honest performance.
Which is also why Joaquin Phoenix is as good as the Joker. Maybe he is really
the Joker.
He's the Joker? He's the Joker, yes. But yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's it for this one. Thank God.
Tom did not seem too excited about this one.
No, it's fun talking about it. I think this movie is trash.
That's
I do
fair.
Not
I
understand
totally
all the raves for this movie. It is awful and insulting and just bad. So I guess let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Dom proposes to Lydia. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.